be held throughout the world denouncing the Israeli genocide in Gaza. On Saturday, Europeans made their voices heard as they took to the streets in many cities, from Vienna, Madrid, Rome to London, Berlin and The Hague all have witnessed massive demonstrations in solidarity with the Palestinian people and calling for an end to the Israeli genocide. Other parts of the world also continue to have demonstrations, such as the United States, South America. People are calling for a ceasefire now, and they say no to a ground attack on Rafah. But as they make their voices heard, the Holocaust continues so far, leaving over 30,300 people slaughtered, most of them women and children. When will the world say enough is enough? I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of New York, Margaret Kimberly, co-founder of Black Agenda Report. And out of Ossining, New York, Don DeBar, activist and commentator.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, thank you both for being with me. Nice to see you. Starting it off with Margaret. Margaret, when you see these demonstrations continuing, despite that it has been many months now, I mean, what does that say to you? What exactly does it mean?
Well, it tells us that the world is with Palestine. Regardless of what governments do, regardless of what the U.S. says, the EU says, any of their allies and puppet states, the people of the world are with Palestine. It's very clear there is revulsion around the world at the sight of the war crimes, of the genocides. And I remind your viewers, war crimes are defined. Genocide is defined. Israel's a signatory to the United Nations Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of Genocide. And it's very clear there is intentional harm to a group of people. There is collective punishment. So people know this now. And we have to ask ourselves why, despite the fact that people want an end to the killing, most Americans want a ceasefire. Despite their differences in opinion about U.S.-Israel policy, Americans want a ceasefire, but that is the last thing they will get. And that has to be our question about supposed so-called democracies that don't do what the people want.
Well, Don, it is important to note that many protesters have had to pay a price for their anti-Zionist stance. Let's discuss some of the obstacles that have been placed on pro-Palestine demonstrators, from losing their jobs, demonized, arrested, blocked social media, etc. I mean, your thoughts on this overall?
Well, it's more extensive than that also. Start, for example, with some of the laws that have been put into place over the last 3-4 years or more or less in places like New York State, where if you're a state employee, if you called for a boycott, the BDS program, you can lose your employment and your pension and everything else. These are pretty unique, really, pieces of legislation and restraints on speech in this country historically. As bad as things have been from time to time and altogether over time, the fact that you can't even broach the subject of divesting or sanctioning Israel in a public or even a semi-public forum without losing your employment. This is, you know, I won't say unprecedented, but again, unique. The condition that is giving rise to this, obviously, is that the most horrific crime in the history of humanity that's been televised is being televised right now. This, given the extent of media coverage and the saturation of the audience, which is, you know, global at this point, it even makes the coverage of the Vietnam War in the 1960s pale by comparison. You know, that went on how far back you want to go, but the TV coverage here went on from maybe 1962, 1963, until the war was finally ended in early 70s. Every night people got a body count, like, as if they were watching a football game or whatever. But now we're seeing coverage across the board from people on the ground, no mediation for a lot of it, and people are getting a real sense of what this actually is. And they get to see, when they see what it actually is, the huge vector between what actually is and what the people that are supposedly their leaders are telling them is going on, and the way that the media that they've been following for most of their lifetimes has been portraying it, and it's creating a real contradiction, I think, in people's, you know, minds, you know, a cognitive dissonance that's been kind of unprecedented socially, that's giving rise to these things in a condition, by the way, where people are still suffering massively economically and in almost every other area of their lives. So there's some real revolutionary potential here, and we're even starting to see some of that bleed into reality.
Well, what about that, Margaret? Don talked about the cognitive dissonance. When we look at the situation and the growing schism between the people and the governments, and what the people want and what the governments deliver, let's talk about possibilities, because Don said this can be a real revolutionary moment. Do you think that they're making that connection, that this is really, it is, of course, the main situation at hand is the genocide in Gaza, but the other part of that is their governments and actually becoming aware of really what their governments stand for?
Well, people know what their governments stand for, but we are told in the U.S. that we don't have any options except to vote and to vote for the main party candidates for the duopoly. Donald Trump has not made clear what he would do differently, if he would do anything differently than Biden. He was a strong supporter of Israel when he was president before, so we can only assume he would do the same thing. But this is a moment, and it's not just Israel. This is emblematic of the political system as a whole, that it does not do what the people want. And people are demonized, terrorized into thinking they don't have any options except to vote and to vote for the people who continually do what they don't want to have done. I think you're going to see an increase in voting for smaller party candidates. And I hope you see actually fewer people participating at all. And I hope that we see Americans starting to ask themselves about the political system, about whether or not it really is a democracy, about whether or not their only choice is to vote and to vote for these two parties that have no legitimacy with millions of people.
Well, Don, how likely is it to see even more action by Americans? How about April 15th is coming up? How about not paying their taxes? Because as they become more and more aware of what their tax dollars are going for, wouldn't that be a great possibility or a likely conclusion?
It's not a battlefield to choose to fight this war on, although it might be sort of a, you know, ancillary site. First of all, most people pay their taxes, most people that are working or that have an income stream pay their taxes as they make the income. So that money is already in the hands of the government. The documentation they have to file by April 15th is to reclaim their share of it in the event that it was overtaken and overpaid. Or to make up for a deficiency. Then, even if it were effective, however, The power that's granted to the Internal Revenue Service, in other words, to the collection arm of the U.S. government, is so vast and so extensive that the moment their computer tells them that you didn't pay your share, they can go on a hunt and seize your property, put a lien against your house, clean out your bank account, whatever, with really very little opportunity to fight. So this is an area where all you're going to do is lose, basically. Because of the way the media is set up, you're not going to really have an opportunity for anyone to even know that you did it. People are just going to wonder how you ended up on the street. But this does raise a question to me, because we're seeing people in the streets now, all over the world, about Gaza. They're in the streets, for example, in Europe over other things, and I'd like to get to that later. But, we did this with Iraq. It's very good to see people mobilize, first of all, because it says, A, they're aware of what's going on, B, they have a serious enough problem with it to get off their behinds and out of their lives and come into the streets and try to do something about it. But we've seen also, it's not terribly effective, if it's effective at all. And if it is effective, it's effective on a very long, slow curve. And when you have a genocide going on, the people at the other end of the genocide don't really have that much time. You know, we can settle the question of whether this was wrong or not well after the time that it's done, and it doesn't do much good to the people who are being killed, and it doesn't even do much as an example to make sure that never again is really never again this time. We have to start formulating some things that we can do to stop things now, and I think that's where a lot of our thinking and a lot of our work has to be placed at the moment, to figure out things that are effective in a much more immediate sense and start trying them out and seeing what works.
Okay, I'm going to get back to you on that. But, Margaret, it's not just Europe, of course, but other parts of the world that are denouncing the Israeli genocide, also places like Caracas and Havana. Do you think we're on the verge of a global transition and increased solidarity against not only the Israeli regime, but also its supporters?
Oh, I definitely think so. That's definitely the case. The problem, as Don DeBar pointed out, is that the people who fled to Rafah for protection and who are now being killed by Israel don't have that kind of time. There is a change in the world. The unipolar world, where the U.S. Felt it could control the whole planet for the past 30 years, is clearly over. But we don't see, as of yet, a formation that is willing to take action to stop this. And I think we have to talk about other countries, too, and what they do and don't do. How many countries have ended diplomatic relations with Israel? How many of them are trying to send supplies to the people in Gaza? There are Arab governments, Egypt, which is going along with this ethnic cleansing plan. It's a U.S. puppet state, and I think we need to protest them too. Mm-hmm. There was an oil embargo 50 years ago in the 70s by the oil producing states in the region. We don't see any talk of that now.
Right.
So while this these political formations are changing, it's not changing fast enough to help the people of Gaza.
Well, Don, in Washington, D.C., protests and sit-ins continue in front of the Zionist embassy, where American airman Aaron Bushnell lit himself a fire in protest of the Israeli genocide. Do you think that after his death, more Americans are becoming more aware of their responsibility in general for this genocide, their tax dollars? After Bushnell wrote, quote, "What would I do if my country was committing genocide? You're doing it right now."
Very good question. Back in 1963, there were a couple of Buddhist monks that lit themselves on fire in protest of the U.S. war in Vietnam. And then in 1965, Norman Morrison lit himself on fire outside the Pentagon in the full view of then Defense Secretary Robert McNamara. And McNamara has spoken subsequently about the impact that had on him. But that war didn't end for another 8 years. Now, Aaron Bushnell was standing outside of the Israeli embassy, And let's say it's him with whatever the device is, but we'll call it a Molotov cocktail or something filled with an accelerant that you light a match and hit the target. There's two potential targets there while he's standing there, and I'm not advocating hitting either one of them. But the reality is he could have either turned that on himself as he did, and that's one set of outcomes that come with it, and or he could have thrown it at the embassy, and that's another one. And then the question would be is, one, what is the following, what follows from what he actually did? And then also, what would follow if he had turned it the other way? What would the reaction, what would the response be? And I think all of the things that we're looking at right now, we have to look at in that context. What is going to follow from doing this? What do we have as historical precedent? And how does that play against the timeline of trying to save these people from being, you know, extinct?
Yeah. Well, Margaret, let's look at the world in general. Do you feel that the world is becoming more aware of who the real axis of evil is and who the real axis of resistance is and the importance of this?
Oh, yes. I think people around the world know that the people we're always told we shouldn't like, the people we're supposed to hate as being terrorists, we're supposed to hate as being evil, are not. It's the people directing us, propagandizing us. That's the axis of evil, and people know it. That's why you see millions of people around the world protesting. Here in New York yesterday, it was a pouring rain, and still thousands of people came out. So people know. The question is, what are they going to do? Aaron Bushnell, his act was one of frustration, of the powerlessness that people feel. I think people need to have more of a revolutionary mindset and think about other things they can do rather than destroying themselves in hopes of changing policy. You know, he's the second person to self-immolate. Someone did in Atlanta who apparently survived, but that person was disappeared. Their name has never been given, their age, their gender, nothing. Mm-hmm. And we're told this, the law enforcement and the media covered it up completely. So Aaron Bushnell is actually the second person
right
to do this. But that degree of frustration is not what we want to see. We want to see action, and if nothing else, we have to start out with the question of what we do differently.
And let's start from there, Don, because you already talked about the protests, that how effective are they at the end of the day. We saw a lot of protests in 2003 and run-up before the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and that didn't change anything. So what's next? What should be done in your perspective?
I think we're going to see some examples of what can be done taking shape, particularly in Europe. It's not written about much here. They'll talk about farmers' protests in the same way that they did about the truckers, basically, that is some kind of anti-immigrant response and racist, et cetera, et cetera. But in fact, what's happening in Europe right now is that the large capital formations in the West, Vanguard, et cetera, have taken over the bulk of the usable farmland in Ukraine on the cheap under the conditions that have existed there for the last four or five years. And they're starting to dump crops into the European market at the same time that there's like a 1-2 punch being delivered to the farmers over the so-called global warming concerns. And so having endured 40 or 50 years already of all kinds of austerity and rollbacks in various public subsidies, et cetera, people's backs are to the wall who never expected they would get there. This like the middle class of Europe that is now forced into the trenches with the workers, and those who are even worse off than the workers have been rendered. We're seeing an expression of anger and frustration in the context of an understanding that the institutions are no longer legitimate. And that is now happening where even the moral face of the parties in water are being exposed as genociders in front of the whole world. So I think the kind of response we're watching form in Europe is going to include some technologies for you know, revolutionary activity that we haven't seen before, that we might look to and study and perhaps adapt to our own conditions if they're appropriate. I have spent a little time now on two separate trips with the Yellow Vests in Paris, for example, and heard conversations that they have about, you know, just they've been trying to maintain a basic organizational presence on the streets of Paris since the first time I was there was in 2018. And as these things flare up, there are different groups, Communist Party, Socialist Party, et cetera, that have an infrastructure that people can latch onto. Again, I think we're going to start seeing like a maturing of revolutionary technology on the streets of Europe that we can look to maybe for some advice.
Okay. What about the streets of the United States, Margaret? Your thoughts?
Well, I believe that these protests are going to continue and they're going to intensify, but the question remains what else people will turn to. Will it be self-destruction, like in the case of Aaron Bushnell, or will it be under some sort of revolutionary action? And that can mean a variety of things. But I think what is clear is that the system has no legitimacy for millions of people. There are cracks even among the ruling class. Don mentioned funding Ukraine. There's disagreement about whether to continue it. This had been a bipartisan policy, and now some Republicans want to stop that funding, although the same hasn't happened about Israel. So I think people need political education to figure out what steps to take next that would be more effective and take advantage of this moment. This is, you know, there are people who think, you know, that by osmosis there are going to be changes. No, it's the people who have to make the change. The arc of the moral universe does not bend towards justice unless people demand that it does, unless right. people force it to. So that's the question now. Are the people going to act on their feelings of disenfranchisement, their realization that they don't live in democracies? How are people going to respond on the subject of Israel and others?
Okay. Well, Don, at the bottom line, do you think there's anything that is going to stop this Holocaust besides the resistance itself?
Well, resistance, of course. Question is, what kind of resistance focuses on what points, what's effective, who can sustain what long enough to deal with what's coming from Israel and really from the United States through Israel? it's a war. Israel and the United States, or the United States is at war with the people of Palestine, with the people of that region, pretty much with the whole world, using various agencies in this particular battle, I guess, of Gaza. It's with the Israeli military as a front. But it's the same war that's being fought in Ukraine, and it's the same war that's being fought in a variety of places in Latin America and Asia, whether it's in the brush and Africa. It's the same enemy. It's humanity on one side, and the elite that dominates the structures of Europe, Asia, Japan, South Korea, a few other places, on the other. We don't know who's in the castle now. We just know that all of our things are being taken from us and dragged there, and someone's consuming them and coming back and beating hell out of us all the time. You used to be able to go to the castle and drag them out and off with their head, and things were better for a while. We don't know who that is now. We're looking at something that was meant to survive a nuclear war and still function. So we have to figure out how capturing the this is the reason I always looked at January 6th as a joke. Capturing the Congress would not capture the U.S. government. Of course not. If Congress were hit with a nuclear weapon, the U.S. government would not fall. It was designed to survive that. That's what the Internet is. And so if we're going to organize a revolution against this thing, we've got to understand what it is first. And I think if we get busy on that part of it, a lot of things will fall into place.
And on that note, thank you both for being with me on this Spotlight. Margaret Kimberly, co-founder of Black Agenda Report out of New York. Don DeBar, activist and commentator out of Assani, New York. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 7th, 8th, and 9th verses of chapter Naml.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Idh qala Musa li ahlihi inni anastu naran سآتيكم منها بخبر أو آتيكم بشهاب قبس لعلكم تصطلون.
Mention when Moses said to his family, "Indeed, I have perceived a fire. I will bring you from there information, or will bring you a burning torch that you may warm yourselves."
فَلَمَّا جَاءَهَا نُودِيَ أَن بُورِكَ مَن فِي النَّارِ وَمَن حَوْلَهَا وَسُبْحَانَ اللَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ
But when he came to it, he was called. Blessed is whoever is at the fire and whoever is around it. And exalted is Allah, Lord of the worlds.
يا موسى إنه أنا الله العزيز الحكيم.
O Moses, indeed it is I, Allah, the exalted in might, the wise.
Now, in the previous episode, we mentioned the situation that Moses was stuck in. He had his pregnant wife with him. He was going from Midian towards Egypt, and the darkness of night in that calm and stormy weather of desert, on the other hand, they both pushed Moses to look for something, and that something was the fire that he saw from afar. He thought that it might be indication of someone or some people, so he told to his wife and children that I will go to either bring you some news from that fire, maybe some people are over there, or I will bring you a brand of it that you may warm yourselves. So, in the next verse, the Quran indicates that Moses left his family there and he went for that fire. فَلَمَّا جَاءَهَا نُودِيَ أَنْ بُورِكَ مَنْ فِي النَّارِ وَمَنْ حَوْلَهَا When he came to that fire, he heard a voice. The verse says, that voice was, Blessed is whoever is in the fire and whoever is about it. Glory be to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Now, the commentators of the Quran have delivered different ideas concerning who might be the person mentioned in these phrases. Whoever is in the fire and whoever is about it. What is the meaning of these two? What seems more probable, however, is that the objective of the one in the fire is Moses, who was so close to the fire found inside the green tree that as if he were inside the tree, And the objective of the one about it is the near stationed angels of Allah, who at that particular moment had surrounded that sacred land. Or, on the contrary, the objective of those in the fire is the divine angels, and the objective of the one about it is Moses, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam. However, some Islamic narrations indicate that when Moses approached the fire, he stopped, he watched it carefully, and he saw from the inside of a green branch of a tree, a flaming brand was shining. Every moment, the flame was becoming brighter and brighter, and the tree was growing more green and more beautiful. Neither the heat of the fire was to burn the tree, nor the moist of the tree caused the fire to die. He wondered. He bowed to take some fire and the small piece of wood he had with his hand with that, but the fire came to him. And he terrified, he went back, and sometimes he tried to go toward the fire, and sometimes the fire itself came toward him. And suddenly a voice was heard, giving him the glad tidings of revelation. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, the purpose is that Moses approached the fire so close and so nigh that he was proportionate to the phrase, whoever is in the fire. The third commentary, which has been stated upon this phrase, is that the purpose of whoever is in the fire is the light of Allah, which was shown by the burning firebrand. And the purpose of the phrase, whoever is about it, is Moses who was close to it. However, in order that there would not appear any misconception concerning the materiality of Allah, and at the end of the verse, the sentence, glory be to Allah, the Lord of the world, Subhanallah Rabbil Alameen, makes it clear that He, Subhanahu wa Ta'ala, is free from any defect, and He's free from any deficiency, materiality, and material accident. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry, in your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Italian cities were the scene of rallies in solidarity with Gaza and in condemnation of Israel's inhuman attacks against Palestinian civilians. Rome, Florence, Pisa, Syracuse, Grosseto. For the umpteenth time since early October, tens of thousands of people across Italy took to the streets of the respective cities to express their anger at the Italian government for unconditionally supporting the Israeli regime and at the international community for its complicity in Gaza genocide.
Ad oggi, ma anche in passato.
Today, more than ever, international law is just an abstract set of norms which prevails over humanity. Millions of people have died since the Sykes-Picot Accord over 100 years ago, and we're still arguing over the fact that Palestine is a state or not.
We'll go down in history as those who silently supported the genocide period.
Italy has not condemned Israel for the killing of unarmed Palestinians collecting aid in Gaza in an attack that killed more than 100 people on Thursday. However, Rome has called on the Israeli regime to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators behind the aid massacre to justice.
The Italian police crackdown on students during Palestine solidarity demonstrations in the past weeks has sparked outrage across Italy. Student collectives are at loggerheads with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and police over the rise in attacks against students.
The government and police repression has revealed the bare truth. Our country is a democracy only on paper. Ours are simply the democracies of double standards and deception. We have been attacked during our protests for peace in Ukraine, and we are attacked today. We perfectly know how democracies work in Western countries.
Thousands of artists, curators and critics have signed an open letter calling on the Venice Biennale, one of the world's largest contemporary visual art exhibitions, to exclude the Israeli National Pavilion from this year's art exhibition due to the brutal assaults against the civilians in Gaza. However, Italy's culture minister has firmly backed Israel's participation. Max Civili, Rome.
Across France, supporters of Palestine marched to denounce Israel's constant atrocities and war crimes during their latest invasion of Gaza. The world has been stunned by what's been dubbed the Flower Massacre, the death of over 100 Palestinians and the wounding of nearly 800 others after Israeli troops opened fire on civilians waiting for food.
We are here to ask for sanctions and to expose the hypocrisy of those who said they were shocked by the killing of people starving that were getting humanitarian aid, but at the same time don't do anything to stop the genocide.
Some 600,000 people in Gaza, or 25% of the population, are currently at risk of famine.
The French Foreign Ministry said the shootings were unjustifiable and backed a call for an independent investigation by the United Nations. French President Emmanuel Macron demanded truth, justice, respect for international law, and called for an immediate ceasefire.
In the Western world, was
which is and remains accomplice with the Israeli genocide, but a slight change in the tone of all those Western leaders, including Emmanuel Macron. Remember that a few months ago, Macron was proposing a military coalition to fight the Palestinian resistance in Gaza.
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two.
Il a deux visages.
Macron is two-faced. It is only since the International Criminal Court announced that they would investigate Israel that Macron began to say just a few words which were not in total support of Israel. He continues to give arms to Israel and is as complicit as the leaders in Tel Aviv.
Many marchers carried signs of deceased United States soldier Aaron Bushnell, who set himself on fire at the Israeli embassy in Washington after declaring that he will no longer be complicit in genocide. After the start of Israel's invasion of Gaza, France imposed a nationwide ban on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around the country. Activists were forced to endure mass arrests, a record number of fines, and the infamous brutality of France's police. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Once a boomtown of the Industrial Revolution, Rochdale in northwest England has been reliably Labour for years. Until now. This was an election that saw allegations of fraud, desperate attempts like this one by the right-wing Reform Party.
Make sure you prevent George Galloway from being your MP for Rochdale.
And dominated by the massacre in Gaza.
From the river to the sea.
The result came hours after polls closed.
Hereby declare that George Galloway is duly elected.
A sweeping victory for a veteran anti-war pro-Palestine campaigner who reminded everyone that the anger in Britain over the Gaza genocide is not confined to the Muslim community only.
Every Muslim is bitterly angry at Keir Starmer and his misnamed Labour Party. But you would be very foolish if you did not realise that millions of other citizens of our country are.
Rochdale is home to a 30,000-strong Muslim community.
George Galloway from Rochdale.
Apart from bread-and-butter issues such as the declining public services, unemployment, poverty and crime that have racked the constituency for years, for the majority of the voters here, there was more to take into account.
This as a blessing to basically take our word straight to Parliament, and if one person just goes in there and asks for a ceasefire, asks for all these genocide to stop, it's more than any Labour candidate or Labour MP or anyone has done for many years.
He can bring change to us locally, but also nationally and internationally. So the thing is, the ongoing issue with Gaza is a big issue and it's an international issue. But at the same time, it's not just a Muslim issue. It's about human rights.
The election was triggered by the death in January of opposition Labour Party MP Tony Lloyd. He was replaced by this man, Azhar Ali. On voting day, though, Labour's campaign centre lay shuttered after the party abandoned Ali for making anti-Israel remarks.
By-elections don't always represent the wider national picture. They are protest votes with a local focus. Last time around, Labour won the seat here by 10,000 votes, but this time they lost. And perhaps that is a sign of what's to come, both for Labour and the Conservatives, with the general elections only months away. Saipur Reza, Rochdale, Greater Manchester.
On Thursday, a demonstration was staged in Rome's Parliament Square in protest against the arrest of Anan Yaish, a 37-year-old Palestinian citizen from Tulkarm in the West Bank. Anan was arrested without charge or justifiable cause by the Italian police in the central Italy mountain city of L'Aquila on January 29 on an extradition request by the Israeli government, which Italy's Justice Ministry acquiesced straight away. A month later, Anan Hanan, who holds a valid residence permit in Italy since 2017, is still detained in a prison wing housing only terrorists in the city of Terni.
Hanan's detention is similar to Israel's administrative detention, when a person is kept in prison without trial, without having committed an offence. Israel even wants to intimidate the Palestinians who live abroad.
Israel believes Hanan has committed one and only very serious offence. He has not given up the fight. That's why they are behind him. Italy is surveillance subservient as usual with Israel. Our authorities have arrested an innocent man who is just a member of the Palestinian resistance.
During the demonstration, activists strongly condemned Italy's government for its complicity in the genocide in Gaza.
We know full well how heavy Israel's influence is on the Italian government. Prime Minister Meloni wanted to ban pro-Palestine demonstrations. We have seen her going hand-in-hand with Netanyahu.
More pro-Palestine protests will be held in Italy at the weekend. Large demonstrations will take place in Rome, Florence and Pisa. Meanwhile, a group of Italian lawmakers announced they will travel to the Rafah border between the Gaza Strip and Egypt. They say they want to provide the Italian government with a testimony of the tragedy the Palestinians are experiencing as a result of Israel's crimes. Max Civili, Rome.
The new satellite Pars 1 aboard Soyuz launch vehicle was blasted off from a Russian space base and successfully put into orbit 500 kilometers above Earth. The imaging and research satellite will provide a set of remote sensing data that can be used in various fields, including land, forest, water monitoring, and mining and energy transmission lines. The domestically made satellite weighs nearly 150 kilograms and is capable to capture images of 95% of Iranian territory.
The Pars 1 satellite is a two-way researching satellite built by the Iran Space Research Institute and has three types of applications for collecting data from the Earth's surface. The first payload of the color spectrum with an accuracy of 15 meters, the second payload with an accuracy of 150 meters for thermal imaging, and a payload with 300 meters accuracy for imaging with shortwave infrared spectra, which is used to identify plant and forestry pests.
Some Iranians gathered in the country's Space Research Institute to watch the event and express their thoughts about this launch.
We're very proud of this moment. This cooperation between the two countries shows the country's development in international interactions.
I came here today to see this proud moment, and I hope that in the future I can play an influential role in Iran's technological developments.
Pars 1 is designed and manufactured by experts and young scientists with the cooperation of knowledge-based companies. This is the second foreign launch of Iranian satellite. Last year, Iran launched Khayyam satellite from a space launching pad in Kazakhstan. Iran is among the world's top 10 countries capable of developing and launching satellites.
The latest launch is an important step forward in the country's space program. Despite sanctions imposed by Western countries in recent years, Iran is excelling in a wide range of technological developments, including in the space sector. Farzan Ashuryon, Tehran.
Pakistan's newly elected lower house of the parliament met for the first time on Thursday with freshly elected members taking oaths amid protests on the floor by the supporters of jailed former premier Imran Khan. They called for an audit of the recently held polls in the country.
We will bring back our beloved leader Imran Khan along with the mainstream leadership of our party with the power vested in the newly formed parliament. We demanded on the floor of the House that the chief election commissioner and officials of the electoral body should step down immediately because they were involved in poll rigging and manipulation of results.
Although candidates supported by the imprisoned Khan secured the majority of seats in the country's National Assembly, the Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz and Pakistan People's Party, along with their political allies, have united in an alliance to establish a coalition government. They have nominated former Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif as their candidate for the country's chief executive position for a second term. Khan's opponents say that the democracy has emerged victorious, while those setting up obstacles in the way of country's progress and prosperity have been defeated.
We consider Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf as a roadblock to the country's progress and prosperity. They are attempting to sabotage democracy through the rhetoric of poll rigging and are striving to foment anarchy in the country.
Efforts from the government coalition to persuade its former key ally have encountered a hurdle with the leader of Pakistan's primary religious political faction, affirming its decision to refrain from participating in the formation of the government. Once the head of the former coalition, the chief of Jamiat Ulama-e-Islam, Maulana Fazlur Rahman, parted ways with the newly formed coalition and decided not to be involved in forming the new government.
A hung parliament in Pakistan has been sworn in amid allegations of poll rigging and results manipulation. Experts say that the formation of a coalition government in the country with a split mandate would face severe political challenges in the days to come. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
As a result of a broad consensus in Iraq to end the presence of U.S.-led international coalition forces from the country, both the Iraqi nation and government made it crystal clear that these military forces are no longer needed. Iraqi National Security Advisor Qasem al-A'raji stated that all political factions in the country have agreed on the need to end the presence of U.S.-led military coalition purportedly formed to fight Daesh terrorist group.
Today, we're witnessing the negotiation with the international coalition forces, and honestly, what makes us the Iraqi people exasperated is the insistence by the U.S. to keep its troops on our land to have an intervention in the military scene of Iraq and neighboring Syria.
Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani stated that the Western Alliance mission will end at the Baghdad government's official request. He also said that the government is setting a date for the start of bilateral committee talks, which includes representatives of the military coalition to put arrangements to end the presence of international coalition forces in Iraq permanently.
We have collected more than 100 signatures and prepared the legal draft to end the international coalition mission in Iraq. And we pledge before God to our people that we will enact the law to expel the foreign forces from our land.
The demands to end U.S. military presence in Iraq are not new. After Washington's assassination of top Iraqi and Iranian anti-terror commanders, General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis 4 years ago, Iraqi parliament voted to expel foreign forces who can endanger security and stability in Iraq and jeopardize civil peace.
Following the recent attacks on anti-terror forces and the continued violations on the country's sovereignty, the Iraqi nation and government are now determined to end the presence of foreign military forces to prevent any further escalations that can endanger the stability and security of Iraq. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allah ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah, walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah, wallahu akbar.
Imam Khomeini's historic speech outlining the state of affairs of the course of the revolution. Date January 23, 1983. Topic: Importance of Propagating Islamic Culture. Brothers and sisters of the various faiths should join hands. The programs must be prepared based on the perception and culture of Islam. I hope that with the strong heart and warmth that you have, you succeed in the job you are doing. Today the country belongs to yourself. Today everybody knows and understands that they are working for themselves, for the future of their own country. Put your trust in Allah, for whatever we possess is from Him and are for His servants.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. This is the Spring of the Truth, and I am Bita, the host of today's episode. We're going to start with this sentence from Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its revolution. If a person is full of knowledge, even if one has a good command of Islamic techniques, and even if one understands monotheism, but one is not purged and purified, still one will cause harm to oneself, one's country, one's nation, and to Islam. No benefit will be achieved. Man cannot construct others unless he himself is constructed, and the country cannot be constructed if others themselves are not constructed. So this is like a vicious cycle. If you cannot perfect and construct yourself, then you cannot construct another person. No matter how much knowledge and how many techniques, how much virtue you think you have, it doesn't benefit the society or the country and the nation.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi.
The human being's passions are not limited to 1, 2, 3, 10, or even 100. The human being's greed is also unlimited by taking one country, two countries, or 10. The prophets were assigned to limit them, to bring them under control, to control this unleashed animal who believes in no limits. If this creature is left alone and free to itself, and if one is not trained, one becomes so unleashed that one wants everything for one's own sake and seeks to sacrifice everybody for oneself. The prophets were assigned to bring them under control and to give them some criteria. So, the whole point of this speech is that if you feel that you are full of knowledge, you're good-mannered, and you're decent at, it doesn't mean that you are free from all the animal desires that you have in yourself. Don't forget that beautiful verse of Holy Quran, that we know you better than what you think, and we know all the dark suggestions that your soul makes to you, because we are nearer to you than your jugular vein. And I think here the point is, the whole world is not ultimate goal before the prophets. Rather, it's a path to the followed to reach the destination, which is the high grade of humanity. If a creature reached that high human grade, one will achieve a happiness which is not limited just this world. The ultimate goal is the world behind this one.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha.